The Hemulin has gone to pick mushrooms, said the Snork, and the Muskrat has taken his hammock in because he thinks the nights are beginning to get cold. And then your mother is in a very bad mood today.
Angry or sad? Moomin Troll asked in surprise.
More sad, I think, answered the Snork.
Then I must go into her at once, said Moomin Troll. He found Moomin Mama sitting on the drawing-room sofa, looking most unhappy.
What is it, Mother? He asked.
My dear, something terrible has happened, she said.
My handbag has disappeared. I can't do anything without it. I've searched everywhere, but it isn't there.
So Moomin Troll organized a hunt, in which everybody but the Muskrat took part.
Of all unnecessary things, said he, your mother's bag is the most unnecessary. After all, time passes and the days change exactly the same whether she has her bag or not.
That is not the point, said Moomin Papa indignantly. I must confess that I feel most strangely towards Moomin Mama without her bag. I've never seen her without it before.
Was there much in it? Asked the Snork.
No, said Moomin Mama. Only things that we might need in a hurry, like dry socks and sweets and string and tummy powder and so on.
What reward do we get if we find it? Sniff wanted to know.
Almost anything, said Moomin Mama.
I know, I'll give a big party for you, and you can have nothing but cake for tea, and nobody need wash or go to bed early.
After that, the search continued twice as hard. They hunted through the whole house. They looked under the carpets and under the beds, in the stove and in the cellar, in the attic and on the roof. They searched the whole garden, the woodshed, and down by the river. The bag was not to be found.
"Perhaps you climbed a tree with it, or took it with you when you went to have a bath?" asked Sniff.
But Moomin Mama only shook her head and wailed,
"Oh, unhappy day!"
Then the Snork suggested putting an advertisement in the paper, which they did, and the paper came out with two big items of news on the front page. Snufkin leaves Moomindale. Mysterious departure at dawn. And in slightly bigger letters, Moomin Mama's handbag disappears. No clues. Search in progress. Biggest ever August party as reward to finder. As soon as the news had got about, a huge crowd collected in the wood, on the hills and by the sea, and even the smallest forest rat joined in the hunt. Only the old and infirm stayed at home, and the whole valley echoed with shouting and running.
"Dear me," said Moomin Mama, "what an upheaval!"
But she was secretly rather pleased about it.
"What's all the buss about?" asked Thingamy.
"Oh, my handbag, of course, dear," said Moomin Mama.
"Your black one?"
asked Thingamy.
"That you can see yourself in, that has poor fiddle lockets."
"What did you say?"
asked Moomin Mama, who was far too excited to listen to them.
"The black one with poor fockets," repeated Thingamy.
"Yes, yes," said Moomin Mama. "Run out and play, dears, and don't worry me now."
"What do you think?"
asked Bob when they got into the garden.
"I can't bear to see you so miserable," said Thingamy. "I suppose we must bake it tack,"
said Bob with a sigh.
"Potterwitty, it was so nice to sleep in the pittle lockets."
So Thingamy and Bob went to their secret hiding place, which nobody had discovered yet, and pulled Moomin Mama's bag out of a rose tree. It was exactly 12 o'clock when they went through the garden, dragging the bag between them. The hawk caught sight of the little cavalcade and went off at once to spread the news over Moomin Valley, and soon the Stop Press News announced, "Moomin Mama's handbag found by Thingamy and Bob. Touching scenes in Moomin House."
"Is it really true?" Moomin Mama burst out. "Oh, how wonderful! Where did you find it?"
"In a truesry," began Thingamy. "It was so nice to sleep."
But just then, lots of people came rushing in to congratulate them, and Moomin Mama never found out that her bag had been used as a bedroom by Thingamy and Bob. And perhaps that was just as well. After that, nobody could think of anything but the big August party, which was to be held that night, and everything had to be got ready before the moon rose. How nice it is to prepare for a party that you know will be fun, and to which all the right people are coming. Even the Muskrat showed some interest.
you should have a lot of tables," he said. "Little tables and big ones in unexpected places. Nobody wants to sit still in the same place at such a big party. There will be more fidgeting than usual, I'm afraid. And first you must offer them all the best things you have. Later on it's all the same what they get, because they'll be enjoying themselves anyway. And don't disturb them with songs and so on. Let them make the programme themselves."
When the muskrat had produced this surprising piece of worldly wisdom, he retired to his hammock to read a book on the uselessness of everything. "What shall I wear?" the Snork Maiden asked Moomin Troll nervously. "The blue feather hair decoration, or the pearl diadem?"
"Take the feathers," he said. "Just the feathers round your ears and ankles, and possibly two or three stuck into the tuft of your tail."
Thanking him, she rushed away and collided in the doorway with the Snork, who was carrying some paper lanterns, and who muttered crossly about the uselessness of sisters, before he strode on into the garden and began hanging the lanterns in the trees. Meanwhile, the Hemulen was arranging fireworks set pieces in suitable places. They had Bengal lights, blue star rain, silver fountains, and rockets that exploded with stars.
"This is so dreadfully exciting," said the Hemulen. "Couldn't we let one off just to try?"
"It wouldn't be visible in the daylight," said Moomin Papa. "But take a squib and let that off in the potato cellar, if you like."
Moomin Papa was busy on the veranda, making punch in a barrel. He put in almonds and raisins, lotus juice, ginger, sugar and nutmeg flowers, one or two lemons, and a couple of pints of strawberry liqueur to make it specially good. Now and again he had a taste. It was very good.
"It's a pity about one thing," Sniff remarked. "We haven't any music. Snufkin isn't here."
"We'll use the wireless," said Moomin Papa. "You'll see, everything will be all right. And we'll drink the second toast in Snufkin's honour."
"Well, whose is the first, then?" asked Sniff, hopefully.
"Thingamy's and Bob's, of course," said Moomin Papa.
The preparations were getting more and more frenzied. The entire population of the valley, the woods, the hills and the shore were coming with food and drink, which they spread out on the tables in the garden. There were big piles of gleaming fruit and huge plates of sandwiches on the bigger tables, and on tiny little tables under the bushes there were ears of corn and berries threaded on straws and clusters of nuts nestling in their own leaves. Moomin Mama put the fat for frying the pancakes in the bathtub, because there weren't enough basins, and then she carried up 11 enormous jars of raspberry juice from the cellar. The 12th had been cracked, I'm sorry to say, when the Hemulen let off his squib. But it didn't matter, as Thingamy and Bob had licked most of it up. When it was dark enough to light the lanterns, the Hemulen beat the gong as a signal for the party to begin. Thingamy and Bob were sitting at the top of the biggest table.
"Fancy," they said. "So much buss and fodder, all in our honour. Can't understand it."
At first, it was very solemn, as everyone was dressed in his best and felt a bit strange and uncomfortable. They greeted each other and bowed, saying,
"What a good thing it didn't rain," and "Fancy the bag being found,"
and nobody dared to sit down. Then Moomin Papa made a little opening speech, in which he began by explaining why the party was being held, and then thanked Thingamy and Bob, after which he made some remarks about the short August nights, and how everyone should be as happy as possible. And then he began to talk about what it was like in his youth. This was the signal for Moomin Mama to push in a whole trolley full of pancakes, and everybody clapped. Things at once began to liven up, and soon the party was in full swing. The whole garden, in fact, the whole valley, was full of small lighted tables, sparkling with fireflies and glowworms, and the lanterns in the trees swung to and fro like big shining fruit in the evening breeze. The rockets leapt proudly up into the August sky and exploded infinitely high up in a rain of white stars which slowly sank down over the valley. All the little animals lifted their noses up to the starry rain and cheered. Oh, it was wonderful. Then the blue star rain began to fall, and the Bengal lights whirled over the treetops. and down the garden path came Moomin Papa, rolling the big barrel of red punch in front of him. Everybody came running down with their glasses, and Moomin Papa filled every one, cups and bowls, birch bark mugs, shells, and even cornets made of leaves.
"Good health to Thingamy and Bob!"
cried the whole of Moomin Valley.
"Hip hip, hurrah! Hip hip, hurrah! Hip hip, hurrah!"
"Dappy Hayes!"
said Thingamy to Bob, and they drank each other's health. Then Moomin Troll got up on a chair and said, "Now I want to drink the health of Snufkin, who is trekking south tonight all alone, but feeling, I am sure, as happy as we are here. Let us wish him a good pitch for his tent and a light heart." And on that everybody raised their glasses. "You did speak well," said the Snork Maiden when Moomin Troll sat down again. "Oh, well," he replied shyly, "of course, I thought it all out beforehand." Then Moomin Papa carried the wireless out into the garden and tuned in to dance music from America. And in no time, the valley was filled with dancing, jumping, stamping, twisting and turning. The trees were thronged with dancing spirits, and even stiff-legged little mice ventured onto the dance floor. Moomin Troll bowed low to the Snork Maiden and said, "May I have the pleasure?" But as he looked up, he caught sight of a shining light brimming over the treetops. It was the August moon. It sailed up, a deep orange colour, unbelievably big, and a little frayed round the edges like a tinned apricot, filling Moomin Valley with mysterious lights and shadows. "Look, tonight you can even see the craters on the moon," said the Snork Maiden. "They must be awfully desolate," said Moomin Troll. "Poor Hobgoblin up there hunting." "If we had a good telescope, couldn't we see him?" asked the Snork Maiden. Moomin Troll agreed, but reminded her of their dance, and the party continued with more high spirits than ever.
"Are you tired?" asked Bob.
"No," said Thingamy. "I'm just thinking. Everyone has been so nice to us, we must try to rue something in return."
And they whispered together for a while, nodded, and whispered again. Then they went off to their secret hiding place, and when they came out, they were carrying the suitcase between them. It was well after 12 o'clock when the whole valley was suddenly filled with a pinky red light. Everybody stopped dancing as they thought it was a new firework, but it was only the opening of Thingamy and Bob's suitcase. The king's ruby lay shining in the grass, looking more beautiful than ever, making the fire, the lanterns, and even the moon look pale and wan in comparison. Awestruck and speechless, they all crowded round the glowing jewel. "To think that anything could be so beautiful!" exclaimed Moomin Mama. Sniff heaved a deep sigh and said, "Lucky Thingamy and Bob!" But meanwhile, the king's ruby was shining like a red eye in the dark earth, and up in the moon, the hobgoblin caught sight of it. He had given up searching, and sat tired and sad on the edge of a crater, resting himself while his black panther slept a little way off. He recognized the red point down on the earth at once. It was the biggest ruby in the world, the king's ruby, which he'd been hunting for several hundred years. He started up, and with gleaming eyes, pulled on his gloves and fastened his cloak round his shoulders. He dropped all his other jewels to the ground. The hobgoblin only troubled himself about one single precious stone, and that was the one he would hold in his hands in less than half an hour. The panther threw himself into the air with his master on his back, and they began to hurtle through space faster than light. Hissing meteors cut across their path, and stardust caught in the hobgoblin's cloak like driving snow, and it seemed to him that the red fire below burned more brightly. He steered right towards the valley of the Moomins, and with a last spring the panther landed smoothly and silently on the top of Lonely Mountain. The inhabitants of the valley were still sitting in silent awe in front of the king's ruby. In its flame, they seemed to see all the wonderful things they had ever done, and they longed to remember and to do them once more. Moomin Troll remembered his midnight rambles with Snufkin, and the Snork Maiden thought of her proud conquest of the Wooden Queen. And Moomin Mama imagined herself once more lying on the warm sand in the sunshine, looking up at the sky between the swaying heads of the sea pinks. Each one was far away, lost in wonderful memories, when they were all startled by a little white mouse with red eyes who slunk out of the wood and scurried towards the king's ruby, followed by a coal-black cat which stretched itself out in the grass. As far as anyone knew, a white mouse had never lived in Moomin Valley, nor a black cat either.
"Puss, puss," said the Hemulin,
but the cat only shut its eyes and didn't bother to answer. Then the wood rat said,
"Good evening, cousin."
But all she got from the white mouse was a long, melancholy stare. So Moomin Papa came forward with two cups, wanting to offer the newcomers a drink from the barrel. But they took no notice of him. A certain gloom crept over the valley. People whispered and wondered. Thingamy and Bob got anxious and put the ruby back in their suitcase and shut the lid. But when they tried to take it away, the white mouse stood up on his hind legs and began to grow. He grew almost as big as Moomin House. He grew into the red-eyed hobgoblin in white gloves, and when he'd grown enough, he sat down on the grass and looked at Thingamy and Bob.
"Go away, you muggly old an," said Thingamy.
"Where did you find the king's ruby?" asked the hobgoblin.
"Mind your own business," said Bob.
They'd never seen Thingamy and Bob being so brave.
"I have hunted for it for 300 years, said the hobgoblin. "I'm not interested in anything else."
"Nor are we,"
said Thingamy. "You can't take it away from them," said Moomin Troll. "They got it quite honestly from the Groak." But he didn't mention how they had exchanged it for the hobgoblin's own old hat. Anyway, he seemed to have a new one.
"Give me something to munch," said the hobgoblin. "This is getting on me nerves."
Moomin Mama at once bustled forward with pancakes and jam and gave him a big plateful. While the hobgoblin was eating, they edged a little nearer. Somebody who eats pancakes and jam can't be so awfully dangerous. You can talk to him.
"Does it taste good?"
asked Thingamy.
"Yes, thanks," said the hobgoblin. "I haven't had a pancake for the last 85 years.
At once everybody felt sorry for him and came still nearer. When he'd finished, he wiped his moustache and said,
"I can't take the ruby away from you, because that would be stealing. But couldn't you exchange it for, let's say, 2 diamond mountains and a valley full of mixed precious stones?"
"No,"
said Thingamy and Bob.
"And you can't give it to me?" asked the hobgoblin.
"No,"
they repeated. The hobgoblin sighed, and then he sat for a while, thinking and looking very sad. At last he said,
"Well, go on with your party, and I'll cheer myself up by working a little magic for you. Everyone shall have a piece of magic for himself. Now you can all have a wish, the Moomin family first."
Moomin Mama hesitated a bit. "Should it be something you can see?" she asked. "Or an idea, if you know what I mean, Mr. Hobgoblin."
"Oh, yes," said the hobgoblin. "Things are easier, of course, but it will work with an idea, too."
"Then I want to wish that Moomin Troll will stop missing Snufkin," said Moomin Mama. "Oh, dear," said Moomin Troll, going pink. "I didn't know it was so obvious." But the hobgoblin waved his cloak once, and immediately the sadness flew out of Moomin Troll's heart. His longing just became expectancy, and that felt much better.
"I've got an idea," he cried. "Dear Mr. Hobgoblin, make the whole table, with everything on it,
fly away to Snufkin, wherever he is, just now." At the same moment, the table rose into the air and headed south, with pancakes, jam, fruit and flowers, punch and sweets, and also the muskrat's book, which he had left on the corner.
"Hi," said the muskrat. "Now I should like my book spirited back again, please."
"Right," said the hobgoblin. "Here you are, sir."
"On the usefulness of everything," read the muskrat. "But this is the wrong book. The one I had was about the uselessness of everything."
But the hobgoblin only laughed.
"Surely it's my turn now," said Moomin Papa. "But it's very difficult to choose. I've thought of masses of things, but nothing is absolutely right. A greenhouse is more fun to make yourself, a dinghy too. Besides, I've nearly got everything."
"Perhaps you don't need a wish at all," said Sniff. "Couldn't I have yours?"
"Oh, well," said Moomin Papa, "I'm not sure about that."
"You must hurry up, dear," urged Moomin Mama. "What about wishing for a pair of really nice book bindings for your memoirs?"
"Oh, that is a good idea," Moomin Papa exclaimed happily, and everybody screamed with delight when the hobgoblin handed over two red Morocco leather and gold bindings set with pearls.
"Me now," squeaked Sniff. "A boat of my very own, please, a boat like a shell, with purple sails and a jacaranda mast and rowlocks made of emeralds."
"That was quite a wish," said the hobgoblin kindly, and waved his cloak. They all held their breath, but the boat didn't appear.
"Didn't it work?" asked Sniff in disappointment.
"Indeed it did," said the hobgoblin. "But, of course, I put it down on the beach. You'll find it there in the morning."
"With rowlocks made of emeralds?" asked Sniff.
"Certainly. Four of them and one in reserve," said the hobgoblin. "Next one, please."
"Hm," said the Hemulen. "To tell you the truth, there was a botanizing spade that I borrowed from the snork that got broken, so I simply must have a new one."
And he curtsied in a well-brought-up manner when the hobgoblin produced the new spade. Author's note, the Hemulen always curtsies, because it looks so silly to bow in address. "Don't you get tired of working magic?" asked the Snork Maiden.
"Not with these easy things," answered the hobgoblin. "And what will you have, my dear young lady?"
"It's really very difficult," said the Snork Maiden. "May I whisper?"
When she had whispered, the hobgoblin looked a little surprised and asked, "Are you sure you want that to happen?"
"Yes, sure," breathed the Snork Maiden.
"Well, all right then," said the hobgoblin. "Here we go."
The next moment, a cry of surprise went up from the crowd. The Snork Maiden was unrecognizable. "What have you done to yourself?" said Moomin Troll frantically. "I wished for eyes like the Wooden Queen," said the Snork Maiden. "You thought she was beautiful, didn't you?"
"Yes, but," said Moomin Troll unhappily.
"Don't you think my new eyes are beautiful?" said the Snork Maiden, and started to cry.
"Well, well," said the hobgoblin. "If they aren't right, then your brother can wish for the old eyes back again, can't he?"
"Yes, but I thought of something quite different," protested the Snork. "If she makes stupid wishes, it really isn't my fault."
"What had you thought of?" asked the hobgoblin.
"A machine for finding things out," said the Snork. "A machine that tells you whether things are right or wrong, good or bad."
"That's too difficult," said the hobgoblin, shaking his head. "I can't manage that."
"Well, in that case, I should like a typewriter," said the Snork sulkily. "My sister can see just as well with her new eyes."
"Yes, but she doesn't look so nice," said the hobgoblin.
"Dearest brother," cried the Snork Maiden, who had got hold of a mirror, "please wish my little old eyes back again. I look so awful."
"Oh, all right," said the Snork at last. "You shall have them for the sake of the family. But I hope you're a little less vain in future."
The Snork Maiden looked in the mirror again and cried with delight. Her funny little eyes were back in their place again, but her eyelashes had actually become a little longer.
Beaming all over her face, she hugged her brother and said, "Sweetie Pie, Honey Pot, you shall have a typewriter for a Christmas present from me."
"Don't," said the Snork, who was very embarrassed. "One shouldn't kiss when people are looking. No, I couldn't bear to see you in that awful state, that's all."
Aha! Now only Thingamy and Bob are left from the house party, said the Hobgoblin. "You can have a joint wish, because I can't tell the difference between you."
"Aren't you going to wake 'em-ish?" asked Bob.
"I can't," replied the Hobgoblin sadly. "I can only give other people wishes and change myself into different things."
Thingamy and Bob stared at him. Then they put their heads together and whispered for a long time. Then Bob said solemnly,
"We've decided to wake a mish for you, because you are nice. We want a booby as rootiful as ours."
Everybody had seen the Hobgoblin laugh, but nobody believed he could smile. He was so happy that you could see it all over him, from his hat to his boots. Without a word, he waved his cloak over the grass, and behold, once more the garden was filled with a pink light, and there on the grass before them lay a twin to the king's ruby, the queen's ruby.
"Now, you're not miserable any more," said Bob.
"I should say not," said the Hobgoblin, tenderly lifting up the shining jewel in his cloak. "And now every single one of the animals shall wish for what he wants. I shall grant all your wishes before morning, because I have to be home before the sun rises."
And now they all had their turn. In front of the Hobgoblin there circled a long queue of chirping, laughing, humming forest creatures who all wanted to have their wishes granted. Those who wished stupidly were allowed another chance, because the Hobgoblin was in a very good temper. The dancing started again, and more trolleyfuls of pancakes were wheeled under the trees. The Hemulin let off more and more fireworks, and Moomin Papa carried out his memoirs in their smart new binding and read aloud about his youth. Never had there been such a celebration in the Valley of the Moomins. Oh, what a wonderful feeling when you have eaten up everything, drunk everything, talked of everything, and danced your feet off, to go home in the quiet hour before the dawn to sleep. And now the Hobgoblin flies to the end of the world, and the mother mouse creeps into her nest, and one is as happy as the other. But perhaps the happiest of all is Moomin Troll, who goes home through the garden with his mother just as the moon is fading in the dawn, and the trees rustling in the morning breeze which comes up from the sea. It is autumn in Moomin Valley, for how else can spring come back again? The End.